The Emerging Markets Equities Podcast by Aberdeen Standard Investments.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Aberdeen Standard Investments Emerging Markets Equity Podcast. I'm Nick Robinson from the EM Equity Team. In this podcast series, we explore the factors that underpin our thinking on emerging markets, from key individuals to evolving trends. We seek to answer the five W's: who, what, where, when, and why, that are shaping investment opportunities in the region. Today, we are going to discuss the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, what they are, why they came about, and how the stewardship of capital can play a role in advancement towards those goals. To help me approach this subject, I'm very happy to be joined by my colleague, Fiona Manning. Fiona, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to our discussion today.
Fiona is based in London on the emerging market team, and she's been with the firm for 20 years. Fiona's been managing our emerging market socially responsible investment funds from their launch in 2016. But more recently, she's led on the launch of our new fund that's aligned with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So she adds that to her long list of responsibilities. Whenever I hear of Fiona's home life, I always get the sense she truly lives the sustainability brand. She lives in glorious countryside, growing her own vegetables with lots of children and chickens running around. I trust that vision is still accurate as we approach these final days of homeschool, Fiona.
Well, it's still definitely very much all about the free-range children and chickens. But I think, like everyone else, we're very much counting down the days to back to school. I have to say, I never thought I would ever find myself saying that I missed my commute, but I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to get back together as a team in person later in the year, of course, all being well. So yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. And certainly if there's one thing that my kids have learned during all this, which is actually quite possible, it's that real life school is better than being homeschooled at home by both parents when we're both also trying to kind of hold down our jobs as well at the same time.
I know, who'd have thought it?
Yeah. So today we're going to discuss the Sustainable Development Goals. So perhaps we could start right from the beginning. Could you explain what they are and how they came about?
So the goals were defined and agreed at a meeting of the United Nations in 2015, or rather I imagine a series of meetings given their enormous scope. And they're designed to pick up and build on the Millennium Goals from the beginning of the millennium. And effectively, the overarching aim is to deliver sustainable economic, social and environmental development globally by 2030. I think they're best summed up, actually, in the words of the commitment that they issued at the time. So I'll just read that out because I think it really shows the huge sort of scope and breadth of the goals. So it's a resolution to end poverty and hunger everywhere, to combat inequalities within and among countries, to build peaceful, just and inclusive societies, to protect human rights and promote gender equality and the empowerment of women and girls, and to ensure the lasting protection of the planet and its natural resources. So it doesn't really leave any stone unturned, as you can see with the sort of ambition and the scale and the breadth of what it is that we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, there's an awful lot there. And striking that this is all to be achieved in just 15 years. But then that brings to mind the Bill Gates quote about most people overestimating what can be done in a year, whilst at the same time underestimating what can be done in a decade. So that seems quite apt in this case. So coming back to the goals, what's the framework for them and how are they influencing investment strategies and indeed how companies are actually running their businesses?
So effectively, the UN has taken that mission statement, I suppose, for want of a better description, and broken it down to be more manageable and focused. So we have 17 high-level goals, which are then supported by 169 more specific sub-goals, and they address a range of issues that are effectively pulled out of that mission statement. And taken together, they really help to define and really look to resolve the most significant challenges that are facing the world today, as has been identified by the members of the United Nations. Effectively, they operate as a call to action. We can see them as that, primarily for governments and states, it has to be said. But the fact that they provide an independent and universally agreed framework for global priorities is really what makes them so powerful for asset owners, for asset managers, and indeed for companies themselves. They serve really, I think, to highlight the areas of greatest underinvestment globally. A signpost for governments and for us of what should be spending priorities, and therefore signpost also the opportunities for companies in terms of future growth and investment. Now, I guess the second part of your question is how we might, how this influences how we might manage funds. And I think this is a really interesting area of focus. And of course, it goes without saying, and everyone's very aware that the last few years have seen a really significant acceleration in demand for a broad range of sustainable products across the asset management industry. And the updated flow numbers for 2020 show significant inflows into passive vehicles, active vehicles across various asset classes. And I think the requirement for what we call ESG integration into company research and portfolio construction is really now given for most clients. On top of that, I think most markets are very familiar with the range of options for clients who are looking to exclude certain business activities. So the sort of negative screening that we might be familiar with, taking out exposure to things like tobacco, alcohol, those sorts of things. And also more what I would call best-in-class strategies that look to get exposure to companies that manage their ESG risk framework appropriately. But I think what's more nascent, and certainly in public equity markets, is this concept of actively allocating capital to investments, which are deemed to have a very explicit positive outcome. And it's here, in this sort of investment environment, that the goals are used most commonly as a basis or a framework for thinking about that capital allocation and for thinking about investment guidelines.
Thanks. So so just the 169 sub-goals to focus on. Yeah, you wouldn't guess that this framework's probably been put together by a bunch of committees with lots of their own special interests at play.
Yeah, absolutely. But, what I think is quite interesting is that, for investors, we don't have to take all of those goals on board. So we can be more selective. And of course, different products target different outcomes and a different sort of subset of the goals. There's lots of ways of slicing and dicing it.
Right, quite. And when we actually talk about positive outcomes, what do we mean here? And also, to what extent is this linked to positive economic outcomes for investors who are ultimately investing in the funds?
Yeah, so generally, we're talking about identifiable, and in the case of impact funds, measurable, positive social or environmental change. And importantly, coming from new capital allocation, which is specifically designed to address a specific problem. We can see that in the roots of impact strategies, which were very much started off in the philanthropic domain, and actually is still this sort of concept of impact, although becoming more prevalent in public markets, is still much more common in private equity. But I guess what's exciting is really that development in the public equity space, because we have the huge potential scale of capital available in public equity markets. And of course, underlying that and linked to that is really the power of corporate investment. So I think there's huge potential to support the aims of the UN Sustainable Development Goals in different ways through innovative product development across a range of products, the traditional impact strategies, or as I've mentioned, the sort of specific targeted thematic outcomes around climate or water, but also strategies which are aligned to the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And that works well in less developed markets, so ideal for emerging markets or perhaps small caps, where there are challenges around data availability to hit those key targets for measurability that you have in sort of traditional impact strategies. And of course, as you alluded to in your question, really what's imperative for investors is the ability to deliver financial returns for clients. And I think it's really important to say that we don't see a contradiction here. So, of course, as we've said, not all of the sub-goals are directly addressable. They are designed for governments, for states, not directly for companies and for to be an investment framework. But many of them can be addressed by private enterprise. And the attraction for companies and of course, therefore investors, is the potential for value generation here. Effectively, companies looking for and finding innovative solutions in underinvested areas to grow their businesses profitably. And, you know, we do see government support that comes along with the Sustainable Development Goals, either directly or through regulation. And this is, you know, it's particularly true, as you know yourself, in EM and Asia, where up until now, there's been much less focus on investing for positive outcomes. And I do see a real opportunity through bottom-up research, effectively, to identify companies that are either already delivering positive impact, but have been overlooked by the global players in the space, or importantly, are really on a clear and identifiable path to impact. So they're not quite yet there yet, but they're definitely moving in the right direction. And that's where we can, you know, we can identify the companies at an early stage of development. And that's, you know, that's quite exciting. I think for emerging markets in particular, of course, what makes it more interesting is, of course, that many of the areas of focus for the UN Sustainable Development Goals obviously directly impact emerging and frontier countries. So these are companies operating in their home markets, which will really benefit most from progress towards achieving their goals. You know, a great example of that has been the development of renewable power technology within the Chinese market. And, you know, we've been through a period where there was significant and explicit government subsidy support for that industry. And we're now in the period where that support is rolling off, where the cost of renewables is at or extremely close to grid parity. And we see a real pathway for growth and for an expansion of that addressable market effectively over the next sort of 10 years and beyond. So I do think that, you know, emerging markets are a very fertile hunting ground for ideas for companies that can deliver this sort of positive outcome that we're talking about.
Okay, that's interesting. So effectively, adoption of the goals is potentially positive for companies in terms of opening up opportunities to grow their business, but also cutting costs through sustainability. And I guess also at the same time, there's the angle about lowering their cost of capital as they're able to access this growing pool of SDG-driven capital. And you know, certainly it's been striking the last couple of years that the stock performance of sustainability leaders has been particularly strong, partly, I'm sure, due to the huge amount of money flowing into this investment theme.
Absolutely. In combination with the fact that, you know, as we move closer to 2030 or 2050 in terms of climate transition, you know, that impetus for investment is certainly accelerating. And so that addressable market is also expanding.
In the last podcast, we talked about renewables, which I imagine is a huge opportunity in SDG also.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned China there, and I know you spent a lot of time talking about the huge range of opportunities across the value chain with Mubi. And of course, we see significant value here as well. But actually, part of the attraction of looking at the full range of goals rather than going down that thematic route is that there's a huge breadth of opportunities outside of renewables across a whole range of sectors.
So what would they be? Would you mind talking us through a couple?
Yeah, sure. So in the past, we've talked a lot about the opportunities to deliver financial inclusion. And that's been a key area of focus within emerging markets in terms of populations that lack access to banking services. And, you know, there are a myriad of companies that we can invest in through microfinance to digital banking. So that is obviously one area. More topically, I suppose, given the impact of COVID, that's really shone the light on opportunities in healthcare. And there's a couple of really interesting opportunities here, sort of outside the direct COVID impact. So first, I guess there's the development of biological pharmaceuticals. Now, this is really a truly global impact. And I see this really as an extension of what has historically been emerging market pharmaceuticals' traditional competitive advantages. So, you know, we see low cost, high quality production of generics. And over the last 20 years, you know, we've been able to see how much that has driven cost deflation and improved access to pharmaceuticals across a huge range of global markets, both developed and emerging. But the challenge with the development and large scale production of biological compounds is that it's a much more specialized proposition with bigger barriers to entry. But actually, there are a number of Chinese, Korean and Indian companies in this space that have developed real competitive advantages here. And that allows the targeting of harder to treat illnesses and can have a real impact on the cost of some of these biological solutions for both developed and, as I said, and emerging markets. Then, of course, the other area we can look at within emerging markets itself is access to healthcare, both through the physical footprint of healthcare facilities, where per capita availability of pharmacies and clinics, hospitals is generally much lower than we see in developed markets, but also more broadly, things like entry-level insurance. Emerging markets, for the most part, people are paying for their healthcare costs out of pocket. So that lack of universal healthcare provision also provides opportunities for positive impact and profitable returns for companies. And the other area, of course, is the availability of licensed pharmaceuticals. So China is a great example here. China has significantly fewer licensed drugs and indeed medical equipment available to treat complex conditions within the market. So there are a range of companies that are facilitating new drug and product launches within China for the domestic population that are quite interesting. So companies like Mindray, which specializes in medical technology, and Zai Labs, which is involved in drugs licensing within the Chinese market. Those are two fairly topical examples, but actually, you know, the range is much broader than that. We have, for example, infrastructure development, which is often overlooked, and the power of green building. One of the things that we've seen when you look at the impact of carbon is the negative impact that we see from infrastructure, from the construction industry. And there are some really innovative companies that have been able to deliver, you know, really significant savings in terms of resource management for property developers through technology, for example, something like Glodon in China. And indeed, the developers themselves. So developers that are adopting green building practices for office and retail developments in line with international green building standards. And in general, sort of higher quality developments that are able to attract a premium valuation. But also importantly, they have lower operating costs, longer asset lives, so that there's much greater value there potentially for investors. And examples of companies across emerging markets are things like Ayala Land in the Philippines, China Resource Land in China, and then in India, often wrapped up in a REIT structure, we have things like Ascendas and Embassy. So lots of really interesting ideas across a range of different types of sectors and targeting different types of positive outcome.
And then approaching emerging markets from another angle, when you look at the opportunity set, what kind of companies would we not invest in and why? Are there any no-go areas?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, first of all, it sort of goes without saying, or maybe it doesn't, but certainly it should do, that we very much have a do no harm ethos in managing our sustainable development strategies. So as a team, as a portfolio construction group, we have a rule of thumb that any material revenues generated by activities that we see as being in direct opposition of any of the sustainable development goals renders that company ineligible for inclusion in our universe. And we use 10% as our sort of guideline for that. We do also have some formal negative screens that we think about in terms of these strategies and that we apply to portfolios. But actually, what's far more important is what we sort of call the sniff test. So does our bottom-up research indicate that the proposed company, that the proposed investment is really in the spirit of the strategy? And that to me is really critical in terms of thinking about the types of businesses that that we're trying to invest in. And secondly, the other aspect that, we're very clear about is that in order for a company to be eligible for a sustainable development strategy, we really do need to be able to very clearly identify the area of investment that the company's serving, and to see how that is aligned to the sustainable development goals. And really importantly, to ensure that that is in fact an underserved area, so that there really is that need for new investment to address a particular problem. And the only way that we've found to be able to have this understanding is really through the bottom-up research research process. But effectively, the result of that research process is that many of the businesses that you're familiar with from an emerging markets perspective, and you know, many of the names that are indeed big index weights for emerging markets, aren't eligible on that basis for these types of strategies. So for example, you know, we just don't see how a gaming company like Tencent in China, which we acknowledge is a great quality business, very high, a strong economic moat, attractive in lots of ways in terms of its ability to monetize its business, but we just don't see how that contributes positively and materially to sustainable development. Alibaba is another great example, very well known. And actually, interestingly, Alibaba probably was responsible for positive developments at its inception in terms of the work that it's done in to drive access to finance in China through, you know, their financial initiatives. But actually, what we see today is that that moat has been created. The positive impact has already been delivered in terms of the number of small and micro businesses, individuals who have access to selling markets, to finance, to mobile payments that otherwise they wouldn't have. So effectively, we're looking for companies that are at an earlier stage of development in terms of the impact that they can deliver on a forward-looking basis, I guess. So companies where these outcomes haven't yet been achieved.
Okay, that's quite interesting how the impact can evolve over time and how you need to look at that on a forward basis. So you have all these various investment opportunities that fall nicely in line with the SDGs, as well as the pretty significant no-go areas. How do you then think about combining all of those into a portfolio in terms of balancing exposures across the market, but also across the various goals themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. So the outcome of this type of differentiated thinking with regard to portfolio strategy, it is a portfolio that looks quite different from mainstream global emerging market portfolios, and indeed the index. And there will always be risk exposures, factor exposures that this type of product simply can't get exposure to. We can't cover. So things like oil and gas, extractive metals and mining are also really tricky given the obvious environmental impact of those types of businesses. However, I guess looking at one of the huge advantages of looking to be aligned across a broader range of sustainable development goals rather than a specific subset of goals that you sort of look at on a more thematic basis is that we do have a broader opportunity set. So we can balance some of the higher growth companies that maybe look a bit more expensive in the short term, but are seeing very fast growth and expansion in their sort of total addressable markets. We can balance those with some other names, other exposures, which offer much greater value. We also have the option, of course, for investment in smaller cap companies. That can be quite interesting, and frontier markets. So that can offer some interesting diversification benefits in terms of putting a portfolio together with regard to exposure to different types of business, different markets, different economic drivers. And what's interesting is that really makes this type of aligned sustainable development strategy quite complementary for clients who might have existing emerging market products, because you do end up with this exposure, as I say, that is quite that's quite differentiated.
Great. Well, on that optimistic note, that feels like a good place to draw this podcast to a close. So the only thing left for me to do now is thank my guest, Fiona. Thank you.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
And thank everyone who took the time today to listen in. If you enjoyed today, then please download our other podcasts from our website or wherever you normally get your podcasts. Watch out for our next episode and tune in.
Thank you for listening to the Emerging Markets Equities Podcast, brought to you by Aberdeen Standard Investments. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And for more great content, visit aberdeenstandard.com.
This podcast is provided for general information only and assumes a certain level of knowledge of financial markets. It is provided for information purposes only and should not be considered as an offer, investment recommendation, or solicitation to deal in any of the investments or products mentioned herein, and does not constitute investment research. The views in this podcast are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily reflect those of Aberdeen Standard Investments. The companies discussed in this podcast have been selected for illustrative purposes only or to demonstrate our investment management style and not as an investment recommendation or indication of their future performance. The value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, and investors may get back less than the amount invested. Past performance is not a guide to future returns. Return projections are estimates and provide no guarantee of future results.